Mr. Leary, reel 11.
And we went along a bit and we come to soldiers stood on the side of the road.
English soldiers?
No, there wasn't English soldiers and there wasn't Belgium soldiers. We knew we'd seen Belgium soldiers because these soldiers was like in different uniform. And of course our eyes had got used to the dark by then. And, you could see them. They stood in fours and fives. Well, after we'd passed about four or five little groups of these, a fella said to me that was with me, he said, you know, it looks a bit funky round here. He said, you know, I think we're getting out of Belgium altogether. I said, and I do and all. I said, what do you think? Oh, he said, I think we best turn back and go the way we come, get right into Antwerp where the big fires are shining up now. So we turned around, I think there was three of us then together, and we took it into our heads and we come back into Antwerp.
How had the battalion managed to get split up while you were retreating?
Well, you're going along in the dark and you had your blanket slung over your arm. Your blinking pockets was full up with ammunition. And you couldn't, what you say, march. Well, it was get out of the trenches and we thought we was going back into trenches at the rear. And we just kind of, follow the crowd or follow them in front of you.
Yes.
So that's how that was.
I see. So you got back to Antwerp.
So we've seen all these where the tanks was burning, and we crossed over a pontoon bridge and we got to Antwerp.
What was the scene in Antwerp when you got back there?
Oh, these tanks was on fire and the petrol had been running away like in streams, and it was all blazing up and we had to go through it. Oh, the heat was terrible. So it was all disorganised and we all went, well, with the three of us, we went through what we thought was the easiest part to get through. We got through it and got into Antwerp. Well, Antwerp was deserted. You couldn't see anything. And like the front doors of some of the houses we was passing, and one of these chaps that was with me said, well, I think I'll go in here and have a look. Well, when he come back, we waited for him. When he come back, he said, you know, he said, oh, there'd been right rumpus in there. The meter's broken open where they get the gas and all that business. Any road. The three of us went walking along, going in the opposite direction from Antwerp. We could see the fires behind us, so we knew we was getting away from it, more into Belgium, as we was in Belgium then. Well, we walked and we walked and we walked until it was daylight and we kept on walking. Eventually, we come to a small railway station. And in that station, there was a train and it was full up with refugees. There was even... Well, the train was full up inside, all refugees, bits of parcels and lay flat, some was men on top of the carriages. Any road. We three managed to get inside, crush ourselves inside the train. And eventually the train started off. Well, we knew that we must be going further into Belgium or all these refugees wouldn't have been on it. So away the train goes and eventually we come to Brussels. And we was told there that the train was not going any further that night. Any road, some people got off or got out, some people stayed in. Well, the next morning we got into another train, as we found out was going to Ostend. So eventually we got to Ostend. We got to the dockyard and reported there to there was some kind of a bit of establishment, a bit of a place. It was the military, And we said, like, come from Ostend, told them, and did they know if there was any unit, naval unit there? And they said, oh, the best thing you can do is get on that boat over there, because that is going over to England any time now. So we got on this boat, and eventually we got over to England.
Right. You said that while you were in the trenches, you had the job of the company cook. Tell me about that. How did you arrange your cooking facilities for the company when you were actually in the trenches?
Well, you had to make a bit of a fire, like you would a little bit of a campfire in the rear of the trenches.
Yes.
That's how you done that. And, of course, as regards the cooking, there wasn't much cooking to do because you was on iron rations. The only thing you could do there was boil water and make tea. And I used to sometimes make a kind of a rice pudding. You put your water on, and you've made your three quarters of one of these thingamajigs. What do they call them?
While you were there in the trenches, how were your rations getting to you?
Oh, they was issued out. Tin of bully beef, and you got a couple of biscuits, and what else? Oh, you might have got a tin of jam, yes, between two or three, and you got McConaughey's rations. That'd be about one tin between two men. That's a dinner, like cooked, yes, in a tin. There was potatoes and a bit of meat and a bit of vegetable, but it was all cooked. So you'd just open them and kind of divide the tin in two and have half each.
The trenches that you were actually in that had been dug by the Belgians.
Oh, yes.
What were the trenches like there?
Well, there was just, you might have said, a digger had gone along and took about 5 feet deep and about 3 foot or 4 foot wide and just dug it right out, right along, and heaved it on the side. That was all there was to the trench.
Had they been built with fire steps and...
Oh, no, there was none of that.
No.
There was just a straight, well, like you dig for a drain going along, something like that.
Yes.
There was none of this fire steps in, and you had no periscopes or anything like that.
So during the period of time that you'd spent in Antwerp and Belgium, you'd not actually fired your gun in anger at the Germans? You hadn't actually fired your gun in anger at the Germans?
Oh, no, we'd never seen no Germans. No.
Now, after the Antwerp expedition, you were posted to Blandford, and sort of ceased to be sailors there in some respects. What happened to you?
Well, when we got back to Blandford, we was issued, kitted up just like a soldier. We had all our naval uniform taken off us. Well, the only uniform we had then was just what we stood up in, as all our other gear had been lost at Antwerp, at the railway station. Everything, barring our hammocks, as we had sleeping on in the Botanical Gardens, had gone back,
yes, yes,
into the station. And we got to Blandford anyway, and we was kitted up just like a soldier. Putties and all khaki, even the hat we had. It was a sailor's hat, but it was khaki. And the ribbon on it, you know, R&D was on it. Although we belonged to the Naval Brigade, we found out that it was worked into the Royal Naval Division, Anson Battalion Royal Naval Division. We was given 14 days leave then, and we was in full khaki, as like a soldier.
When you got to Gallipoli with the Royal Naval Division, what was the scene there off the coast on arrival?
Well, before you got there, you could hear these guns rattling away, and you gradually got near, of course the town got greater. And we had to lay then off the Gallipoli Peninsula. Mind you, there was loads of ships, all loaded up with men. And this was off what they'd call Helena Bay. Helena. It was the next bay, you might say, to where the River Clyde landed. Where the River Clyde, they beached that, but we had nothing to do with the landing there. We went to the next landing. And then we had to wait until we got a signal to kind of bring these here men of the 29th Division, or some of them, into a whaler, a big boat. So we got these men all ashore, safe and sound. And we had to stay then on the beach and as a working party for them to land anything that was coming ashore. Ammunition or any stores at all. Well, as a matter of fact, we was crouched up against the side of the cliff where the shot and shell was all flying over us. But we actually took no part then in the advance of the shooting. We was there then for a working party. But there was nothing, as I say, coming ashore, so we had to just stay there. Well, on the night, the Sunday night of the landing, oh, it was a let loose. They took all the small ships away from the beach, so there was no getting away off the peninsula, unless you dived in the water and swam away. And the firing was bad all night. And, well, that was the commencement of the landing there.
What do you remember about the landings themselves? Describe those.
The landing themselves?
The landing themselves.
Well, after we had then the job of getting bodies out of the water that had been killed in the boats, and that before the could get ashore, and there was people with parts of the head blown off and battered up, laying about, you might say, 25 yards off the beach. Well, we had a steam cutter going along there, and we had a long rope with a hook on it, and they used to take the hook and get a big boat hook and pull these bodies up towards the surface that was down at the bottom, because these men had been killed with all the kit on, you know, the big thing on the back, because they had all the clothes in and all like that, and they just sunk to the bottom when they got wet. Any road, we had to pull these here fellas then ashore and pull them up on the bank. An officer went along and got the pay books out of the pockets and took all the names down. And then we had to dig a big hole just inside off the landing, a great big hole where, well, I know one drop in, we dropped in about 21 bodies in the one hole. We used to put them in an old blanket, you see, and well, that's all we could do was drop them in the hole. Well, after all the time, you know, there was a gun then that used to be over at Asia. They used to call her Asiatic Annie. And she had the full range of right along the beach. Oh, and she used to lob them over all times of the day, just when you wouldn't expect it. While the naval guns tried to get this here gun, there was aeroplane trying to spot where it was firing from. But they must have knocked it out, and it must have been a howitzer, you know, one of them
big howitzer.
Howitzer, yeah. It must have been one of them that was shelling the coast every time. They must have kept replacing it, you see, with another one. Because sometimes it'd be off a couple of days, and then back again it would come. Well, after about a week, we got then ordered to the trenches, and we had to get in. We got ordered to the trenches, and we took up a position next to the French. The French went like the coast, from the coast until it come to where we took over. And we went then like along until the British Army took over. But the French, what the French had there for soldiers in the trenches was mostly these Singhalese. Well, they didn't wear khaki. It used to be a red tunic and kind of blue facings and white trousers and a damn big knife about nearly 2 foot long, a big kind of what you might call a jungle knife strung down the side of them where we'd ring a bayonet. And a red hat with a tassel on it they used to have. Well, he used to look right bunkies for a fighting unit. At any road. Then there was no such thing as communication trenches. And any trenches that they used to take used to be actually what had been the Turkish trenches, you see. Where it had been the back of the Turkish trench, it had be, when we took the trench, the firing position, you see. See, we was like overlapping. Any road, in these trenches we used to find all sorts, raisins and Turkish tobacco and etc. We used to find lots of things in the trenches, besides dead Turks that had been killed. But after about a fortnight, one Sunday morning, oh, they made a mass attack.
The Turks?
Out over in the open, yes. But we had everything rigged up, machine guns and everything, and we just mowed them down. You could see them going down like you might say a scythe cutting corn down. Some of them turned and run back, and any road...